Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, it's soggy Vancouver.
They call it an atmospheric river. We used to call these pineapple expresses.
Well,
because the weather system comes up over Hawaii and then
Hawaii,
up here.
But you know, in all of those pineapple expresses, I never once saw a pineapple being delivered.
Never.
And
I always expected
it. I had changed it in my mind to the Maui monsoon.
Ah, much more accurate.
Oh yeah, because it delivers a monsoon. But these atmospheric rivers, that's an appropriate phrase.
Yeah, it is. Last year, this time, we had a level 4 or 5 that flooded out Abbotsford, caused billions in damage, washed out our freeways. For a while, Vancouver was totally cut off from the outside world by road.
Yeah.
But that's why we have 300-foot tall trees. We get a lot of rain.
Yes, they get lots of moisture.
No doubt about it.
And then they can only lift the water so far. But, you know, let's do a segue here. Down in the coast of California, they have the redwoods, and they grow even taller than our trees because their liquidity system is not just from the roots, but their little needles. Their needles are designed to absorb the water from the fog. So that's why the sequoias and the redwoods get even bigger. So
yeah. Hard to imagine. I mean, the ones here were big enough that used to make tunnels. You could drive a car through the tree.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the old one down in Stanley Park. So.
We have some listener questions for you, Bob. The first one comes from Bert Wenkenbach. Bert's been a long-time listener. His concerns the yield curve. Bob, he asks, if I understand the yield curve mechanism correctly, is it a measure of speculation? If market participants borrow too short to invest long, the yield curve eventually inverts. The yield curve is still inverted at the moment, but the treasury and equity markets have already taken a hard hit. So where has the money gone that has been withdrawn from these markets so far? Where did it go, Bob?
Hey, it's a markdown in price. Some money sells out at a top, but very little. So it just is a markdown in price. And then the yield curve, that's very appropriate description of the borrowing short and lending long game, which the long side can be stocks, commodities, real estate. But really within the interest rate market itself, it means borrowing money at short term and buying longer maturities and to get a bang out of it. And the demand for speculative funds really does drive the T-bill rate up. And also inversion, we have charts on the U.S. yield curve back to 1857. So there's a lot of business cycle stuff in there, and there are two rules. If the U.S. yield curve inverts, there will be a recession. It inverted. The other is that if it's really dynamic on the inversion, that indicates a more severe contraction. And on the last thrust to inversion, there'd been more robust ones, but it's up there enough to say that we've had a hell of a hit this year. And to me, the yield curve is saying there's more bad yet to come.
And I think there's a second part here to Bert's question. What will happen when the deleveraging of these markets begins in earnest and yield curve returns to normal? My guess, much lower, but maybe the share market will do less bad than the U.S. and EU Treasury markets. The former are still in the private domain. The latter are only backed by future tax income.
Yeah. Well, so, we know from history that it's bad for most investments. Stock markets, yes. Long bonds, the junk stuff gets disappeared. And there are times, and we've seen it this year, where the tightening problems trashed even the Treasury market. So, yeah, but it gets complex out there. I think the three-month T-bill rate is probably, in the first quarter, will head down. And then the Fed will follow with cutting its administered rate. Junk will continue to be a disaster. And then some called investment-grade corporate bonds, they can get in enough difficulty that they get shifted down to junk as well. So the interest rate markets in a post-bubble contraction are always fascinating.
We have a question from Chris in Rhode Island. Hello, Jim and Bob. Please ask Bob on his take regarding a recent article by Alex Kamani entitled "Central Banks Are Buying Gold at the Fastest Pace in 55 Years." If the article is accurate, I'm reminded when Gordon Brown, head of the UK Central Bank, sold more than half the country's gold at the bottom of the market for the price of gold around $275 an ounce between 1999 and 2002. Is this another contrarian indicator? Thank you, Chris in Rhode Island. Oh, and at the same time, the Harper government sold off Canada's gold reserves.
Oh, yeah. The problem with long-term capital management, headed up by a couple of academics who had done particularly important work in derivatives and options and strategies and all like that, and they had a lot of big funds were in. They had the LTCM fund and built quite a few billions of dollars in assets in that, and many of the leading central banks were lending this fund money. And even one, the Italian central bank, took an equity position in this wonderful enterprise. Well, a change in credit spreads nailed them. That began in May of that year. And then by July, they were toast. So what happened then was a major panic. And the panic was to bail out the central banks that unwisely got into the deal. And then also there were central banks that were short gold. So they had to come up with excuses to drive the price of gold down so that they could cover. And yes, England and Canada were the patsies on that. Each country was persuaded to sell off all of it virtually. Well, in Canada it was virtually all the gold. So that, now, of interest is the statements that have been coming out over the last couple of months about central banks increasing their gold holdings. The last one I saw was put out by the World Gold Council, and on supply-demand numbers, they're usually pretty reliable. So, but I haven't seen anything on which central banks were buying. And I think that... Well, I'd been expecting that once gold's real price had turned up and its value was increasing, that then the central bankers would begin to buy it. But they're buying before the real price has turned up. So what I wrote the other day was that the central banks can't figure out why the U.S. dollar is so strong. So they're probably doubting that. And their best liquidity is going to be in U.S. Treasuries shorter than 1 year. So they're not going for that. And less than 1 year stuff, Treasuries in the States is the best liquidity you can get. By liquidity, I mean you can get in and out. And so then the other for liquidity is gold. So maybe it's just that there's nowhere else to go. So they're buying gold. And it is actually will be seen eventually as the wisest thing to do. So it'll be fun to watch it.
We'll have more from Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, before we get into the headlines that caught your attention today, I have a question. The U.S. is going to impose a 1% tax on stock buybacks. Canada is going to impose a 2% tax on stock buybacks. Is this a good idea?
Government shouldn't be that intrusive in financial markets. But the game of doing buybacks, stock buybacks, has been corrupt. The boards of directors of many companies, including some majors, became interested in stock promotion and games to rig their stock price up. Now that's not good. And the best example was Boeing. They arbitrarily decided their stock was too cheap. They spent something like $40 billion buying a stock at high prices. And then when they had problems with their 737, they didn't have money when they were changing it to the new engines and stuff, they didn't have the money to do the very thorough engineering that Boeing's can do. So no, I'm very much against companies doing stock buybacks because it's just a management has turned to become stock promoters. And then the other hand is that government shouldn't have to step in to discourage that type of activity. But it sends a signal to these reckless corporations. So, yeah, don't like it, but hey. But there's nothing like a good bear market to introduce some practicality to boards of directors.
Well, Bob, at one time, share buybacks were illegal, were they not?
I don't know that one.
Oh, they were.
Yeah.
Because they were considered stock manipulation.
Well, it is, yeah.
Also, Germany has banned shorting. They did that quite some time ago under Angela Merkel.
Oh, yeah.
Who believed you invest in a stock market to grow a company, not shrink it.
Yeah, well, you need the shorts in a market because then when it goes down, there are all those bids from the short side. No, the rules on short selling should be you can only short on the uptick, and you can't use shorting to drive a stock down. And that's what shorting on the uptick does. You can only sell on the uptick, and that's the way it should be.
Some of the headlines that caught your attention today, how bearish will Brazil's next soybean crop be? And how important is that soybean crop?
Oh, yeah, this one popped up. You know, with the problems in Ukraine and shutdowns, lockdowns, everything else, the buzz into mid-year was that there's going to be shortages of everything. And so then this headline popped up the other day, and also with a chart. And the expansion of soybean production in Brazil is amazing. And also the chart had two lines. One was the growth in production, and the other was the amount of exports. And that was growing. So then, bang, it hits you in the head. That where in the northern hemisphere, with the end of global warming, the growing seasons in the Great Plains have been shortening, you know, later springs and earlier falls. So this has been a concern of mine for quite a few years now. But what you've got here in places that are near the tropics, you won't be getting much of a change in the length of the growing season. You might get a change in the amount of precipitation. But hey, if Brazil's making a fortune out of soybeans, why not? The more the merrier. So I took it as a very good headline and a very good chart.
Couple of headlines here that are connected. Wind farms dismantled to expand coal as Germany faces its green reckoning. And also another headline, stop dismantling German wind farms to expand coal mines, say authorities.
Yeah. Well, the first one was from the American Thinker, which is a practical publication. And they're actually having to do this, to dismantle wind farms to expand an already existing coal field. And then, of course, that the other one was from The Guardian, who is against fossil fuels. And the this winter is going to be diabolical in Northern Europe and England, where the authority, the governments have been even crazier than governments in Canada and the United States in shutting down reliable, cheap power and putting in unreliable, expensive power. And the folks have just been hit with reality. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But, you know, years ago when you had the problem with the nuclear power in Japan due to the tsunami, that didn't harm the reactor. It harmed the generators for when the source of cooling water was denied, and the backup generators got flooded. They didn't have them high enough up. So the problem was not with nuclear. The problem was with standby. So then that's when Angela Merkel just went crazy and started shutting down nuclear power plants. And so I looked her up, and she had a PhD in physics, for God's sakes. But then I was talking to one of my buddies. They said, I said, how the hell can a PhD in physics be so stupid? She said, oh, she grew up in East Germany, and that explained it all.
Oh. Headline, top Democrats urge Biden to nationalize oil and gas industry. Look how well that worked for Venezuela.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. No, that's crazy. And then at the same time, I just wrote down a headline here this morning. Biden complains oil companies, quote, should be drilling more after vowing to end fossil fuels. So they're getting the political pressures. And but this one, some of the nationalizing the oil business in the United States would be the worst, as you said. Hey, there's Venezuela, explains it all.
Headline, mortgage giant Rocket plunges back to earth.
Yeah. That was from the Wall Street Journal, and they're not given to sensational headlines, but hey, yeah, a huge expansion of mortgages, and now the contraction. So, yeah, that was a colorful headline.
China's CIFI suspends all offshore payments. Is that their central bank?
No, I think it's a big property company.
Oh, it's a big property company, yes.
And they're stiffing their foreign bondholders. So, hey, that's the way it goes. The next thing, all those stiff, the ones in China.
Moody's cuts outlook for European banks, including Germany's, on credit woes.
Yeah. Yeah, they're starting to downgrade credit ratings on various companies and banks and everything else, and that is classic. And at some point, they'll be they'll get a bit behind in their homework, and you're going to find that a certain corporation or something would have had three downgrades all at once. So it's an executive problem. So, but you know, decades ago, I knew a guy in the Dominion bond rating in Canada, and talked with him about, you know, the problem when you get down to a corporate bond that is barely investment grade. And if they then knock it down to junk, then all the institutions that own those barely investment grade bonds, they got to sell them. So I said, you've got a kind of an axe there. And he says, we really don't like to do it, to take that step to actually lower it. So that I get my then, since then, I thought, well, maybe they just want to avoid that possible responsibility. And then downgrade it all at once when everything goes to hell. So who knows? But it'll be interesting. We're on this path now. So,
and Bob, I know maybe we should have put this right at the start because we had the question about the inverted yield curve. But maybe for some of our listeners, and I know they're very informed people, but for the few who maybe don't understand, what is the yield curve and why is it important to know what happens when it inverts and what does that mean?
Yeah, for sure. The yield curve is in the Treasury market, and it's the difference in yields from the short end, like 3 months, 6 months bills, 2 years, out to the 20, 30-year bonds. And it behaves in certain ways in a financial bubble. And even in ordinary business cycle stuff, when the demand for speculative demand for short-term money drives the short rates up higher than longs, that means the curve is inverted. Most of the time, because of the time risks, longer dated bonds will trade at a higher yield than T-bills, for example. So, but when you're in a financial mania, bang, up goes the short rates and the curve's inverted. Now, I'm going to repeat it again. Every inversion in the yield curve in the U.S. has preceded a recession. So, this is locked in now. And, now the other one, since we're talking about interest rates, is credit spreads. And that is the difference in quality, where, you have the, treasuries are the senior quality item, and then you get out to AAA corporations, AA, A, BBB, etc., right out to junk. Now, the difference between, and the big extreme difference, of course, the difference between junk yield and the yield on treasuries. And that then also behaves in a certain manner when you're in a great financial party, is that people... are very eager to buy, reach for yield, and are buying low-grade securities with great confidence. And then when the contraction comes in, these companies or municipalities or countries find that with the contraction, they don't have enough tax revenues to service the debt. So then you have that risk. And it's called narrowing. When the yield difference between high-grade and low-grade narrows, it shows a sign of confidence. And then when it reverses and starts to widen, that shows, some sensibility coming in. But it shows that the radical speculators have done what they've done and have ended being radical and just probably getting damaged. So the financial markets, from stocks to bonds to commodities, and even real estate, are always fascinating as one goes through the final stages of a great financial bubble and into the post-bubble contraction. And this is where we are now. We are in a post-bubble contraction, although in the U.S. you're getting good employment numbers. And the third quarter was, plus 2.6% growth on GDP. But some guys that I know that look at that more closely, there was something to do with inventories and screwing around. So not quite as robust as it would imply. And then also my little guess on this is that with people trying to get their lives back to normal, there's been an improvement in employment. So I don't think it's going to last too long. The stock market within the next few months could take out previous lows and then extend the downtrend. And that is, that would be saying that, that the recession is then becoming inevitable. So, it's a fascinating world, Jim, but it is a very precarious world.
And that's why we have this job.
Yes.
Thank Bob so much for being on the show.
Good to be with you, Jim, and look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.